Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and this is episode 113 of The Prerogative. And on this episode, we finish off February, the month of love, as I sometimes like to call it, the month of romance, the month of many splendid things, with a look at Please Teacher, a romantic anime that's not just quite a boy falling in love with a teacher. There's aliens, and there's relationships, and man-powered planes, and one friend that needs to be punched the fuck straight in the mouth. I'll just put it this way. Well, then again, this mostly came from the last episode, which was actually the OVA. But when you have Well, when you have the words coming out of my mouth saying pimp on pimp, and the bitch brought the dildo, you know you're in for a good time. I'm just gonna say that right now, and my ghetto portion of the show. And no, it's not ghetto because I'm talking black, it's ghetto because I'm talking ghetto. I'm talking hood. However you want to put it. Urban. So yes, it's certainly a good time we're gonna have. So much more than just boy falls in love with teacher. In regards to this past month, and for the most part so far, what Tom's prerogative has been for the new year, I certainly hope you have enjoyed yourselves. I made a commitment for 2015 to review more romantic and to review more ecchi stuff. Which certainly, I'm a huge fan of ecchi animation. And, you know, certainly I do want to point out which, or at the very least, I want to point out what makes good ecchi romance or good ecchi harem or good harem romance. You know, those three sort of categories together. I mean, I certainly will probably be reviewing some more, like, you know, things like Ikitosen. You know, I've already reviewed season one. I'll review, like, some of the other seasons later on in the year. And other shows like that. But part of it is wanting to showcase, you know, the things that make these series good. You know, and I hope I've showed that certainly in the shows that I picked early on in this year, you know. I've done four series, and I say four because while I've done 6 episodes on these series, 2 of those episodes are second seasons of certain series, like last week's Ari Yuri Ayoshi, and of course, Oh My Goddess. But certainly, I've shown with those series, things like Princess Lover and Please Teacher here, what makes a good harem, what makes good ecchi, what makes good romantic series, and why these three genres are so closely tied together a lot of the times. Certainly, a lot of times when we watch animation, we want to look at things face value. It's why pornography gets sort of the way it gets treated as, like, it's just sex, it's just fantasy, it's just there for physical enjoyment. Not that pornography isn't. Maybe that's not the best choice. Maybe a better choice would be a book I'm well known for, talking about Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose. Anytime I show anybody a picture from, or anytime anybody somehow sees a picture of this comic book on the internet, it's like, oh, it's nothing but boobs. And yes, and here's the thing, is people, I've had many conversations with many friends on this book, and there always seems to be this idea, like, I don't acknowledge what the face value is. And certainly, everybody knows what the face value is. Anybody with a brain can. But that's not the point. The point is, there's an old saying, you don't judge a book by its cover, or by the first thing you see of it. And certainly that's true with anime and with all of these things. And that's not to sit there and say that, oh, you can't automatically know whether you'll like a series or not, but, just looking at, for say, Please Teacher, or Princess Lover, or Oh My Goddess, or Ari Yuri Ayoshi, at just face value, completely ignores the deeper aspects of these series. These series want you to think about it. And really, that it's one of the things that really has drawn people to anime. It's certainly one of the things that made me be drawn to anime, is that these series made me think. It's not so much, yes, these are face values, but certainly it makes you think. And this is the great part of what media does. Media can make you think about things. There are people that want to sit there and say that media puts views in people's heads. And certainly, as I said, aforementioned, based off face value, people can think that. Perfect example is, if I sat here and said, what's a cowboy? Particular in the United States or around the world, our view of the cowboy is certainly shaped by the many westerns throughout our history, the past 100 years. Tombstone. I'm trying to think of the one with Emilio Estevez, where he plays Billy the Kid, and I apologize. But, Tombstone, all the Clint Eastwood movies, The Man Who Shot Liberty Vance, Seven Gunmen. I'm trying to think of westerns in my head. Blazing Saddles, for that matter, which is a deconstruction parody of it, which is hilarious. The Lone Ranger. All these shape our view of what a cowboy is. The idea, and then the fables and fairy tales of Wild Earp and Billy the Kid, and the shootout at the OK Corral. These face value views certainly shape our idea of what a cowboy is. But to stop there would to say that humans have no intelligence, and humans don't have the capability to learn. Because then there is the point where you're made to think about what these views are. Certainly, anybody who may be interested in a cowboy is going to research further, or think about what they're seeing further. Think about the story that may be trying to told, and the lesson that's trying to be told there by the author / director, whichever. And there's something deeper there than just, oh, we're having a shootout. There's the idea of heroism of, I gotta do the right thing even though it may be my death. And that's really what makes us inspired by the cowboy is not so much just the cool look and in that he always rides into the sunset. Those are representative of deeper ideas of what it means to be a hero. The ability to stand up and fight when needed to do the right thing when needed to. In a more dangerous mode. You know, and that's not to sit there and say that the face value isn't dangerous when just the face value is taken. You know, look at all the, again, not to be too political here, but the nut jobs who basically want to carry around a gun because they want to hold, or a concealed weapon for that matter, who basically pray for the day that they'll happen to run into some robber in hopes that they'll save the day by using a gun or using a sword or using some type of weapon to go looking for trouble. That's not heroism, but because they've taken the face value, because they've not critically think about it. The titles we've shown so far are just the same. Face value can be taken for whatever you take it. But all these shows, including today's show, have a critical thinking aspect of it that needs to happen while you're watching a show. And to me, that makes a show much more entertaining, personally. I love thinking about, what is the author trying to tell me? What story, what lesson, what are they trying to tell me underneath the face value of the show? You know, with Ariyoshi, there was this deeper idea of love and family that was there. You know, and mind you, again, it's very simple sometimes to see this because it usually is within the theme that you see throughout the show. You know, Ah, My Goddess, family, again, was a very heavy thematic use and a heavy moral about what it means to be a family, what it means to be in love, what it means to be in a relationship. Princess Lover, those ideas of when is friendship more than friendship? What does it mean to be a friend more than just a lover? Those are things that are more critical thinking. And again, you can always draw your own conclusions to when you watch these series. And we're going to see this definitely today with Princess Lover. Is there maybe a face value of this is a simple, you know, boy falls in love with his teacher story, with a little bit of science fiction thrown in. But certainly there is a very, I don't want to say subtle, because it's a big part of the series, but in its own way a little bit subtle, look about the intimacy of relationships. And that's something you can draw about what they're trying to tell you about that from your own conclusion. I'm just going to give you my opinion when we get to story. So certainly, I hope with the first, like I said, the first stuff that I've shown you, I certainly hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope I've made you at least think about what you think harem and ecchi and romantic series are in anime. If I could just get one person to maybe open their mind and just have a, you know, like, maybe I should look at this from a different perspective. If I can get just one person to try that, I've accomplished my job in reviewing these. Not that, because again, my purpose is not to sit there and say that you should automatically like it or automatically hate it, because you got to formulate your own opinion. But to formulate that opinion, you have to have some critical thinking to do that. And everybody can do critical thinking. It's about stepping back and taking the effort to have the critical thinking. Again, it's not to sit there and say that you can't just have fun and watch a series, because certainly there are tons of series. But I can sit there and have fun watching this series, and then I can also sit back and have critical thought. They're not, it's not so much that you can't do one or the other. You can certainly do both. So, like I said, I certainly hope you enjoyed and will continue to enjoy my opinions, and I hope I can make you just think about different perspectives about the shows, and maybe I've hopefully taught somebody something. Because certainly that's what I hope I've been able to do, is teach somebody something. So with that being said, let's get to our review proper. Please Teacher follows a young boy by the name of Kei Kusaragi. Well, See, young is kind of unfair. See, Kay has a disease. A disease that puts him in these things called standstills, which are coma-like states that occur during times of extreme emotional distress. What these standstills derive from is unknown, more than likely psychological, but the fact of the matter is that in these standstills, he basically goes until, like I said, coma-like state, he also stops growing. So he looks like a 15-year-old boy. He's really 18. And so he's, after waking up from the standstill, he decides to go to the countryside, live with his aunt and uncle, and he moves into a school. Well, one day, while, you know, at the pier and looking up over the lake at the school, the big lake that the whole community is surrounded by, he sees a UFO. And a couple minutes later, while running through the forest, he thinks he sees an alien, a beautiful, gorgeous alien. Or should I say an alien that looks like a beautiful, gorgeous Earth woman with beautiful pink hair. Well, not bright pink, but like more of a deep reddish pink, to put it away. But darker than just bright pink. Anyways, the next day, he's surprised, along with the other students, to find out that their old cog of a teacher is up and suddenly quit. And now they have a new teacher, and it's going to be a beautiful young woman. And of course, who should step in but the woman that he saw last night? Not only that, but later on in the day, he finds out that this woman is moving next door to him. Her name is Mizuho. And so not only is she his teacher, but she's also his next door neighbor. Well, upon helping her move in, she comes to the realization that she's also the alien from last night and that he does remember her. Hilarity ensues, and things happen, and people start getting the wrong ideas, and it leads to them having to get married to protect the fact that she is an alien. Will this relationship bloom into anything more? What other relationships might come up for us? All this and more as we get into our review of Please Teacher. We're going to start with the opening and ending theme. The ending theme is okay, just a simple little love song called Sora no Mori De, or translated in English, loosely translated, I'll say, is In the Forest of the Sky by Mami Kawadawa. It's a nice little tune, but it's your typical sort of bromance anime, sort of like love theme at the end. And there's nothing special about it, really, at all. But it's a nice tune. I guess it doesn't really accomplish the idea of, like, calming you down from the series. You know, it's one of those songs, like, it's nice, but it's not really worth listening to, and you just find yourself, like, if you're paying attention, you just quickly fast forward through it. Now, the opening theme, on the other hand, is great, though. I really enjoy the opening theme. The opening theme is Shooting Stars by Kotoko. When I first heard it, because I haven't watched this series in probably a good 4 or 5 years. In fact, the last time I watched this series, I've actually only watched this series twice. The first time and last time that I watched this series was about 4 or 5, possibly 6 years ago. But I had watched it for Lucid Dream, and of course my co-host on the Intergalactic Graphic Review, Edwin's. They had a show called the Anime Roundtable in Review, and I watched it to help them out on that. Well, and I believe it was that before it became... I don't believe I had watched it for High, because that show eventually became the Hijacked podcast, the podcast that would throw you into the drunken speedway at 60 miles per hour, while, you know, Lucid had a beer. Hi, Lucid, how are you? So, I hadn't watched the series in a couple years, and when I first heard the show, or when I first heard the opening song, I was immediately reminded of another song, which I kind of like, which I have, which is the intro song to Air, which is another sort of romantic anime that came out in the mid-thousands as well. But certainly with this, I really enjoy it. It has a great tune. It has a sort of... it's your typical sort of Japanese pop song, sort of soft pop song that would be put into a romantic anime, if that's any indication to it. But the melody's really nice. The use of strings really makes the piece work. Particularly the harp and sort of Japanese harp instruments that are very prevalent in it as well. The melody has this sort of, gives a sort of great idea of sort of the romantic spaced theme, as part of it. So it's a very good song, and I very much enjoy it. And really, it's the shining piece of all of the music in this series. The soundtrack itself, there's really nothing special about. For the most part, most of the series uses the natural noise of what's going around them to be, for the most part, the main part of the soundtrack, or of the score of the series, for that matter. Which is, again, that's the very Japanese, very Asian way of doing things, you know. For those who are not listening to the show, they're, you know, the Western form of doing a score is to have a lot of music in the score and to have a lot of mood music and everything like that. And you have very little quiet points to where you let the natural sounds be the score. Whereas Eastern scores tend to use a lot of quiet, as in scenes where there's no music and you just use the, you know, the sound effects, the birds, the bees, the flowers, the sounds of nature to be the soundtrack, to be the score. And certainly this takes that Eastern approach, but there are certainly individual pieces that are used in certain moments of emotion to tell certain emotions, but they're very simple. One, you know, you have one for, you know, when they're sad, you have one for when, for the romance, and you have one for, you know, that's has more a tempo to it, that, you know, I'm thinking of the scene to where, you know, they're like, they've had a fight, but now he's going back to him, like, I gotta get to her, and it's for that, so there's a little bit more tempo to it. And certainly there's the comedy one. There's a couple of comedy episode scenes. And there's a couple little comedy pieces in there as well. I mean, for the most part, there's nothing inherently awful or bad about the score. It's just not really prevalent, the pieces that are there. I don't really think that the score was the big focus on this series. Certainly, Please Teacher falls into that category of the mid-2000s. Early 2000s to mid-2000s animes that were, fairly typical of the ones that were popped out on a regular basis. That's not necessarily to sit there and say that bad, but there's not so much of a focus put on certain aspects, like music, and for that matter, art. And that's not to say that there isn't beautiful art, but again, it could... This is Bandai visual. So rather than like another studio that sort of centers around maybe an artist and an artist's views, Bandai Visual, while does, at least in character designs, there's the artist view, but there's a certain particular style. It's just, Bandai Visual is, in its own way, is kind of like the Disney of, sort of anime television. I say television because certainly we would say Hayao Miyazaki is the Disney of Japanese anime as a whole. But in regards to maybe television series, Bandai Visual is like, in its own way, Disney. There's a distinct Bandai Visual style. Very Bushojo boys, very... blanking on the other word, but pretty good, basically pretty boys, pretty girls, not too outlandish to where it's unbelievable hairstyles. Like, yes, you may have one of the main characters that may have pink or that stuff, but for the most part, they're gonna have normal hairstyles. And in fact, actually, when you look at Bandai Visual, and I think this is a great segue for getting into art, because again, like I said, outside of Shooting Star, which is the opening theme, which is really good, the music is really substandard. As we, like I said, I'm segueing to animation because I've already segued into it. But Bandai Visual, again, has this very unique thing to where they do a lot of space theme stuff and space and Earth. And so you'll see the Earthlings in the Bandai Visual production be a lot more realistic in some aspects and a lot more... in hair color and eye color and even in body type, whereas, you know, the aliens would always for some reason look remarkably human, will have the wild colored hair and the gigantic boobs, and they're more outlandish and it's more cartoony in the character design. But that's the Bandai Visual style. Just like Gainax has its own visual style. Just like there are other studio, you know, I'm now stuck on the word Gainax. I'm trying to think of there's another studio that's very famous, and I'm blanking on it, so I apologize. That starts with a G. For whatever reason, I can't think of it. But it has a distinct style. So certainly, this is the very typical Bandai style of the overall art, from both backgrounds, to character designs. Certainly in a Bandai Visual production, I think a lot of times the backgrounds are sometimes the best artistic aspect of it. They are the ones that I think shine through the most. We'll get to that though in a second. The character designs are, you know, they're well done. Again, very typical of the Bandai Visual style. I kind of already mentioned what characters look like, so... with the exception of Mizuho, the other characters are very, in their own way, down to earth. You know, you have Koishi with short brown hair that's sort of cropped and has a bit of bounce to it. And that's sort of very typical sort of earth heroine design, sort of the short brown hair. You know, these are patterns that you'll see in Bandai Visual. So all the in their own way, all the character designs are very Bandai Visual. You know, you have the two friends, one's sort of the chibi. I don't want to say Lolita-con because they really never put her in a sexual life, but it's like she's the short, very short, almost childlike, in fact, very childlike looking character with the long hair, but somehow always is deadpan. That's always a serious character. And then there's a bit more preppy yet ditzy other female support character in Kaede, who's red hair and usually always has something. In this case, it's split ancestry, as she's a bit Irish, apparently, with her red hair and everything. There's the best friend, the male best friend that, for some reason, always has blonde hair and always is outgoing and everything. And sort of spiky yellow hair. That's a very common trait. And then you have the more subdued with the black hair. These are all things that if you watch Bandai Visual Productions, you'll see these same type of design aspects coming from them. Kei Kusaragi himself is... his design is pretty much what became known as the typical sort of romantic, ecchi romantic slash ecchi harem lead. You know, that category, that genre of productions. Certainly, he falls into that category of character design. You know, he... different colored hair than what you would see in Japan. Glasses, definitely. You know, it seemed like, in particular in the 2000s, every harem character, every romantic male character had to have glasses. That was an absolute must. And you had very few exceptions, one of them being Ari Yuri Ayoshi. Again, different story, as we reviewed that last week. Really, it's the main female lead who gets probably the best character design. And Mizuho is no exception. But again, still falls into those typical categories. Like, again, being that she's from space, she's a bit more cartoony in her proportions. I mean, it's not gigantic, but certainly, again, I think the term is that she has a more mature chest than the kids. Though, Goshi's packing one on her, too. Nowhere near Mizuho's size. I mean, it's completely realistic for a girl that maybe hit puberty a bit earlier than others, but certainly, again, the pink hair, and there's a much more brighter appearance to her overall character designs, and that goes with the color schemes as well, with the red and the white that make her stand out among the blacks and the dull yellows and the earthy tones of the school uniforms and everything. But even the other teachers, their suits are more earthy toned. Kay's uncle, you know, seemed to have a bit more earthy tones to him. So, certainly, there's... it's your typical Bandai Visual character design group. The action anime, again... all this falls into that typical Bandai Visual aspect of it. And, you know, Bandai Visual is very good with their action animation. So, you know, the running, you know, even though they're not running because they're trying to print and kill, but just, like, I have to run to get to a location because I have to get to Mizuho. And I have to tell her the truth. But there's, you know, there's points where you have spaceship flying and, like, there is one episode where he gets transferred to another dimension. He has, like, I guess, psychic bombs being thrown at him by Mizuho's sister. But, you know, for the most part, all the action animation is done extremely well. Very organic, flows very well. No problems there. And, you know, as I may mention before, Bandai Visual really, really does well throughout the entire series on their visuals. Even though there's this one location, you're going to different parts, and they certainly do use settings over, yet you still feel like you're always visiting or you're always someplace new. Even when you've been someplace before, there's sort of something new and refreshing because they'll change the setting, they'll change the time where that scene takes place and everything. So you may have, like, the train tracks, and there's a point noon, but there's also a point where they show it, like, at 2, and a point where they show it at, like, 8, and it's at night, and in the morning, at sunset, sunrise, you know. And they change the setting, they change the time, and that makes it feel new and refreshed. That's a great job and a great choice artistically by the director to keep, you know, the ability to use certain scenes, but we'll put them this, 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 and this, and it works very well. And the backgrounds just themselves are very gorgeous, particularly the forest and the lake setting. It's just beautiful, the towel. Even when they go to the beach, there's something very sort of romantic to it. The thing that's most interesting about the animation, I find, though, is that the animation, and this is why I think Bandai Visual does it this way, is that it sets up a very solid palette for the story to play off of. You know, these characters, again, these are the verbs and the, you know, the adjectives, music, animation, and even voice acting are for the story and to tell the story. In this case, this is not a series that particularly tells that story through the art, but it tells the story through the story. And so the art is there to be a palette for that story to tell that story off of. And the art in that sense does very well. So, like I said, very solid art. Creates a good palette for the story. With that, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a couple of promos for you. And when I come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right
back. Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds will live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds will die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariane.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear
Man. The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet, are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Armored Hero Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like... Gotcha, Mom! Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about... Tatsuo! Godenna! Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth.
Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember?
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood cools all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise. Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos.
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Imagine the world you have known all your life suddenly begins to change.
The changes are almost imperceptible at first, but soon everything comes crashing around you.
Past and present contradict each other. History is no longer immutable.
Inconsistencies begin to pop up. New origins rendered stories only a few years old null and void.
Those long gone are no longer dead.
Worst of all, your friends and loved ones are vanishing or changing.
The very fabric of reality surrounding the DC universe is unraveling.
In Smallville, Jor-El and Lara have returned to take Superman back to an unexploded Krypton.
In Metropolis, Superman is faced with a multitude of Batmen.
The time stream, made fragile by countless twists and myriad travelers, is now spinning out of control. Time is running out. Quickly.
Only the greatest heroes of every era and reality can stop this crisis in time.
And stop it they must, or the DC Universe will cease to exist, perhaps never to have existed at all.
The heroes and villains of the DC Universe are facing their
Zero Hour.
In 1994, DC published Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, a five-issue miniseries designed to fix some of the continuity issues that had cropped up since the conclusion of the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This was a huge deal, and because of that, and because Superman played such a large part in that story, From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Taylor
and Michael Bailey,
will be covering the Superman issues, as well as Zero Hour itself.
We will also be looking at all of the official crossovers to the series, in addition to devoting several episodes to the follow-up event, Zero Month, where Superman meets a brand new enemy.
Conduit.
Zero Hour.
Zero Month.
Only at From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. From Crisis to Crisis can be found at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com, and is part of the Superman Podcast Network, which is located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Also, be sure to check out the Fortress of Baileytude, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com. There you will find new episodes of From Crisis to Crisis, as well as all kinds of fun bits of business connected to Zero Hour and Zero Month.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting. Which means it's time to go over our cast list. So, first, we have many actually returning champions from last week. This is, I guess, another Bang Zoom Entertainment, or at least people who work for Bang Zoom. first off, David Wittenberg once again returns as, once again, the main protagonist, male protagonist for that matter, as David Wittenberg voices Kei Kusanagi. Bridget Hoffman voices Mizuho Kazami, and she has a sort of connection to another title we did before. She would play Belle Dandy in Oh My Goddess, the movie. Michelle Ruff, you know, Aoi from last week, also returns as Koshi Harikawa, niece or second love interest of the main character. Julianne Taylor voices Ichigo Moreno. Melissa Fan voices Kaede Misumi. Kirk Thornton. Hyosuke Megumo. And Tony Shinora voices Matagu Shido. For the most part, the entire cast did a good job. In particular, David Wittenberg and Bridget Hoffman and Michelle Ruff were all very compelling characters through the voice. They did a wonderful job. They did a great job of showcasing emotion. You know, at first, I wasn't into the way Julianne Taylor was portraying the character. And obviously, the character itself was meant to be played very deadpan. But with that being said, you know, once you learn about the character and her history, it makes a whole lot more sense. And then you start to, you know, basically the voice is more accepting later on when you learn certain things. Because in the first part of the series, she's mostly there for, in its own way, comedy relief against deadpan, as opposed to Kaede's more cheerful delivery. And again, they play off each other wonderfully. But, yeah, so I wasn't into it. Same thing with Melissa Fawn. Again, the returning champion for last week. We have sort of a Wendy Lee's in this, Strassman's in this as I believe Maho, little sister, you know. So yeah, we like I said, we have several returning champions. Kaede, again, I thought as the series went on, she got better, which is certainly a good thing. I'd rather somebody not get the character and then get better as the series goes on, because again, that's what a good actor does, you know. But yeah, certainly in the beginning, I wasn't enjoying her voice as much. And Kirk Thornton and Tony Shakur both did an okay job in their characters. Again, they're, you know, very typical male supporting actors, and they did a good job, and they were funny in their own way. I mean, certainly Kirk Thompson made me want to ask, you know, Kay to, like, punch the motherfucker in the face. Certainly, in other words, Hosuke's character has this very, and it's part of the comedy of, you know, always bringing everybody on these trips that, like, interferes with Kei and Mizuho's plans of romance. In particular, I think of the beach episode where, like, they're on a honeymoon or all alone, and there's in Okinawa, far away from where their school is, which is in Nagano, indications are. Or at least in the Nagano area. So there's no possible way anybody here could recognize us. Oh, but sure enough, what a coincidence, they're there because a teacher is there building a human-powered plane, and he just happens to ask all those five children to come along. And they're all in the same hotel. I mean, it's not just a filler fun episode. There's actually some important things that happen in that episode, as we'll get to it story in just a moment. But certainly, Kurt Thornton's voice lends itself to, like, yeah, Kate, punch him in the face. Just punch him in the face, please. So overall, the voice acting, I would say the main three characters. I say main three because I'm including Koshi as, you know, she's the second on search, and she has a pretty major role throughout the series. I thought they did a wonderful job, and again, they were really leading the charge as far as emotion is concerned. I'm not gushing over them, but they did a really, still did a good job, and I really enjoyed their work in this series. In particular, David Wittenberg, and towards the end, when Kay gets very pervy. Certainly, I cannot gush enough over that OVA, because that was goddamn hilarious. And in particular, where they're, you know, they're kissing and loving, there's the point at the end of the 12th episode where the credit scenes, it's like showing over everybody and how everybody ended up, and there's a point where Kay is like, they're bathing together and she's standing, she's showering, and he's like, yeah, I'm about to hit that. Like, pimp on pimp. Just pimp on pimp. You're about to hear me say more of stuff like that. I know I said that was the end of my urban segment at the beginning. But I can't stop. So, in particular in that OVA, he's hilarious. Really plays the comedy up very well. With that, let's move on to story. And the first thing we'll talk about is we're going to talk about the simplicity of the plot. And it is very simple in its own way. It's also very convoluted. The simplicity is, it's your simple romance of, you know, boy and teacher. But again, the science fiction elements of it, they make it seem more complicated than it really is. The whole point that she's an alien, and the whole reason they're getting married is actually to hide the fact that she is an alien, but in the process they fall. But what makes it simple is the fact that, you know, the idea of, like, well, we're marrying to hide, but in the process we fall in love. That's very simple. That's been done before. You know, you fall in love with somebody you didn't love before. In fact, that question is asked throughout the series of, like, can you fall in love with somebody after you marry them? You know, you're with somebody and you're not in love with them, but then you fall in love, and, you know, that type of love against the love you thought you loved beforehand. Or, you know, very, a plot that's been done before, but again, here, the whole main plot, it's just executed well. And of course, you have the little intricacies that are very tied connectly to Bandai Visual. Again, the whole space theme and everything. Not that Bandai Visual is the only person who does space theme, but it's kind of their stick, to put it away. So, as far as the main plot is concerned, they execute the main plot itself very well. What really works towards the main plot's advantage is the overall theme, which they back up with the other relationship, because really this story isn't so much about this one relationship, though that is the main relationship, and it's the one they keep coming back to, and it is the main focus, but it's the other relationships around it that help them understand the questions that they're asking themselves, which are played along with the themes. You know, the relationships that form, for instance, between Hosuke and Kaede. You know, Koshi is constantly basically flat out telling Kay, you know, I want to be with you. You know, the coming on, the attempts at flirting and coming on to him that she does. You know, and this goes also to the theme of, again, the overall theme of this story is relationships and the intimacy of relationship. You know, how intimacy can grow among relationships between people into love. And once you accept that intimacy, how it becomes natural and open and everything. You know, perfect example of this. Not just the fact them, you know, the whole love hotel thing. I mean, you know, again, Hosuke and Kaede are a perfect example of this. You know, in that beach episode at the end, a whole part of the ending is, you know, you have two separate cases of people going into the wrong bedroom. And in Hosuke, he actually goes into the girls' bathroom. Kaede thinks it's a dream come true, and they indicate that they basically do it. That one thing I like about the show is that it makes no indications of, you know, they're talking about teenagers talking about the difficulties of sex. Which, you know, again, it's not so much, oh, we had sex and it was great. It's like, we ended up doing it and now what? And dealing with the after effects. Are we in a relationship? Where would it go from this? You know, we become intimate. What happens now? These are important questions that don't get talked about when we talk about sex, in particular in this country, where we sit there and we talk about, like, it's a bam bam, thank you ma'am type of deal, and we never talk about the mental process. Which, ultimately, that's why, I think, particularly in the Western culture, but in some sense, I agree that there needs to at least be, I mean, I don't know if I would just say 18 and above. I think maybe it should be lower, but only because I think 16 and 17 can handle it. But at the end of the day, the discussions about the relationship part, the mental part of sex and intimacy, that come along with a relationship. That's played, you know, it's one of the reasons, one of my favorite comics of all time is the Ultimate Spider-Man Annual number 3, in which Mary Jane and Peter talk about this a lot. It's a great issue. And it's sort of the same thing here, where it's that discussion. It's like, you know, I have these dreams, but I have these feelings, and it's like, it was an accident, and I don't want to go any further because I don't want to break her heart, but the fact of the matter is, I want to be with her, I want to stay with her. And then once you accept that, again, you know, they're dressing alike and everything, and they go to a love hotel, and they spend time together. And so dealing with those intimacy questions, relationships, you know, and the whole point of relationships and falling in love, mind you, can you fall in love with somebody after you marry them? What is love in its own way? Can you love after loving before and being broken up? You know, these are questions that are asked, but overall. So, I think these themes really are what are the centerpiece that drive the main plot and drive the story. And they really do well. And this series is, for the most part, almost filler-free arc. I mean, you have the OVA. For the most part, this series stays on its story. And it's a story-driven series. And like I said, what drives that plot are these questions and these themes about love, relationships, and the intimacy of relationships and what it means to be in love. You know, and again, the intimacy, those relationships, that emotional attachment, very much connected with the diseases that, like I said, as we find out, Ichigo also has the standstill disease. You know, she's been disconnected. They don't go into it, but you can make probably indication of friends weren't happy and that caused her this emotional distress. It's pretty much indicated that for Kay, it's the fact that his older sister committed suicide in front of him to escape this reality. You know, which is, that's actually something that's very prevalent in Japanese culture. There are a lot of kids that end up committing suicide in Japan. Possibly for the sort of the same reasons that are sort of talked about here, to where that to reach that nirvana, to escape this reality and get to the other. Not in the sense that they're watching too much shows and they've lost sense of reality, but there's more of a Buddhist aspect of it. Not that Buddhism is about committing suicide by any means, but it seems to be based off the idea of that this is a reality of pain and hurt and everything, and we're going to escape to where there is no pain, which is a very sad thing. So again, very prevalent idea, and how does he deal with that relationship coming to such an end? Because it's indicated that he had such a caring relationship for his older sister, and then for her just to do what she did in front of him and what it caused him. It caused him to go into this standstill. And then, of course, also the relationship, you know, the idea about memories and the fact that, you know, he does remember Mizuho. And when she comes back a year later and he doesn't let on, and, you know, they go back to, you know, being married again. So, again, like I said, the overall themes are really what drive this series. It has a very solid pacing to it that also helps. Each episode moves at a good click. And like I said, there's no filler, so it's really story-driven. And yet, it's the comedy, again, that gives... Instead of having fillers, they allow the comedy in each episode to be very balanced, to really play with. I mean, each episode has a point to driving the story forward, some more than others, though. Beach episode, like the point where, you know, he's on a date with Koshi. But there are points in each of those episodes to where, and particularly towards the end, to where they're, okay, this is the point of the episode, this is what that told, the style moves just the plot forward. And like I said, the comedy is very well done. There's ecchi comedy, but not an ecchi in the way of, like, we're showing body and we're showing nudity. It's ecchi in the sense that there's a lot of sexual talk and a lot of sexual indications. Women, in, you know, a lot of showing of, like, after sex. You know, there are several times they show the uncle and the aunt, and, you know, she's underneath the covers. He's basically in boxers. And, you know, smoking a cigarette, like, indicating the deed. There's one where he's hanging out the window and he's half naked, you know, or at least we think he's half naked. We only see his upper half, but it's covered in lipstick and kisses, and he's there. And then just, like, this young high school girl who apparently was going to be a patient, I guess, asked a question, sees him and gets scared away. And then, of course, his wife, who's, like, just got, like, a sheet around, like, who's that girl? It's like, the one. It's a lot of sexual comedy, but not so much sexual comedy in the standpoint of nudity, but definitely a lot of sexual innuendos and indications like that work very well for the series. Overall, I think this is a really good series. I really much enjoy it. It's not going to be for everyone. It just isn't. Again, this is more in that moderate, advanced anime fan category. Kind of like what Princess Lover is. If I look at the three romantic harem ecchi animes that I reviewed, Oh My Goddess is like the intro there, followed by Ariyari Ayoshi, then Please Teacher, and then Princess Lover, I would say. If you become a fan of sort of Bandai's visual style, this is definitely for you. And, you know, it's just a solid show about, you know, relationships and their intimacy. It just derived around a bit of a sci-fi twist on a sort of classic romantic plot of the forbidden love. And through and through, I think pretty much anybody can sit down and watch and enjoy this. I think if they're allowing to give it a chance. And, I, you know, like I said, what really drives this series forward is that overall theme of relationships and the intimacy of relationships and what does it mean to be intimate? What does it mean to be in love with somebody? Which, you know, it gives you pause to think, why are they trying to tell us about this? You know, why are they trying to tell us about intimacy? But by the way, before I get comedy, I mean, I know I'm in final thoughts, but forget to mention, like I said, that 12th episode is just pure filler. It's obviously not 12, but the 13th episode is, if you're watching this on Hulu, because you can watch it on Hulu, dubbed, mind you, that 13th episode is a complete OVA episode. That's pure comedy. And that's where I get the whole pimp on pimp and the bleep bought the dildo. So final thought is that this is a very solid, very good series. The animation is purely a style aesthetic of a certain studio that you have to enjoy. Music leaves you asking for more in regards of, there's really only one good song, and it's a pure Eastern style. The voice acting is solid, but again, really what drives this entire thing is the story. So I give Police Teacher a 4 out of 5. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any emails or comments or any kind that you want to leave the show, remember there are separate ways to contact the show. One, you can email the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on Stitcher, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. Search for the Absolution Network, like us, and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself. Well, first, you can also find us on Facebook, mind you, by going to Facebook and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us, leave us a comment there. And like I said, you can find leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You would think after doing over 110 episodes of this series, I'd have this part down pat, but what are you going to do? Also, while you're at the site, remember to check out all the other Absolution Network and 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes At the Absolution Network, my CMG's Wrestling Reviews, the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast, Tom's Top 10, of course, along with the Otaku Momentum, Relic, and the Anticast, Shin Tiger Curl and his anime wrestling and video game, fighting video game tournament videos, and of course, John Ramos and his Toku videos as well, including Toku Apocalypse and Let's Review Japanese Spider-Man. Also, make sure you check out my comic book podcasting site as part of 132 Productions, and includes Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, make sure you check out my Godzilla podcasting site, featuring Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, on the sidebar, any of these sites, make sure you check out all our friends. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Fuse from the Long Box. Happy birthday, Mr. Bailey, as of this recording. And of course, from Crisis to Crisis, that it does with Jeffrey Taylor. Right now, they're in the midst of 0 Hour. They're doing great stuff. Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles. Steven Schleicher in the Critical Hit Podcast. And of course, Scott Gardner in the Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I'm trembling with you. Next week, we start Disney Month! Yes, as I made mention before, I moved back a month, and we're now doing Disney Month in March. And next week, we're going to start off with a movie that sort of combines one of my favorite things, music. And that should give you the indication right there. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, next week, we review Fantasia. So until next time, my Toonami generation. Find cover. It's going to get too dangerous for you. Stay home.
Dubdozer. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.